you know, happened in our world.
The Holocaust is obviously for Jews very important in so many different ways, but it's really applicable to all of us because the lessons that came out of the Holocaust, the issues of morality, the issues of values, the issues of dehumanization, that's probably the most important word, dehumanization. Mm-hmm. The real, I would say, what is generally agreed, the overall way in which this sort of killing and murder happens is by individuals dehumanizing other individuals. And what we know and what we see, whether it be with ISIS or with so many tragedies, and whether it be genocides or particularly ethnic cleansing, we see it's dehumanization. It's seeing other people not as individuals but as others and not seeing them as human beings. And that lesson is applicable to everybody all over the world. And you can't hold out too much hope for humanity unless you're really able to understand this idea that when people dehumanize, that is what leads to this sort of tragedy. And we need to work hard to make people understand, whether it's in everyday life that each of us has to face or whether it's in major areas of the world, this issue of treating people as individuals and people is really so critically important. The word dehumanizing is probably what I come away with as the most important lesson that one can get out of the Holocaust. And we're all faced with moral decisions and ethical decisions in our life every day. And, you know, you have to ask yourself, where would I have stood if I were a German citizen in 1933 or 1940 or 41? Would I have stood up and said this is wrong, or would I have gone along with the crowd, or would I have been an active participant? You know, it's a hard test for all of us, and we have to ask ourselves that because, you know, we're faced all the time with judgments where we have to stand up. We see something that's wrong. We see the way that someone's treated in this country, and do we stand up or do we let it go? Do we participate? Are we an active participant? So we do face these kind of issues, and I think that's what I come away with at with the Holocaust. And when you go through the museum, you look at the exhibition, the core exhibit, you see that, and I think that's really what the major message, or one of the major messages. The museum does a lot around that issue, whether it be through programming or special exhibits and so on. We have a program called FASPE, F-A-S-P-E, and it's really teaching ethics or going through the ethical kind of issues that students in journalism school, students in law school, students in medical school face. In everyday decisions, it could be a doctor in a hospital having to face kind of ethical decision with respect to a patient. It could be a lawyer facing. So those kind of issues, we have a terrific program that actually takes students from those different disciplines to Europe. It actually goes to Auschwitz, the site of these horrible murders and killings, and has a few-week course about those kind of issues for both people who are Jewish and not Jewish.
But this still goes on.
Yeah, I think I have to describe it in Europe as a disease. It is like a disease. It just doesn't seem to go away. There was a period, I would say, in the 70s, 80s, where really I thought, 90s even, where I thought pretty much it had been put to bed. But it's pretty clear now that it's not put to bed, that you have serious issues of anti-Semitism in England. You have serious issues of anti-Semitism in France, really throughout all of Europe. Actually, less so, interestingly enough, I think, in a place like Poland, and less so probably even in Germany than the first two countries I mentioned. But there is an important distinction. We do not have government-sponsored anti-Semitism. That is a big difference. Nevertheless, the question is, to what extent are governments attempting to both protect Jews in these countries and really try and put it out? And if you lived in England or France today and you had children, it is a major challenge to make a decision to stay in those countries, because you pretty much have to send your children to private schools. You cannot wear a Star of David around your neck. You probably can't wear a yarmulke some places in these countries. With what's happened in France a few years back, where school children were killed, you go to school in England and they'll have two guards outside every school where there's Jewish children. So it's the kind of environment that you not you have to make a hard decision what you want to do. The problem is our immigration laws, you can't leave. If you're in England, and there are a lot of English who want to leave, the United States is not open. It's too hard to get in here. And Israel's open, and of course that's certainly where people might go, but they don't have a lot of choices.
How do you find that though, in 2015, that this is still going on?
Yeah, I actually have a cousin, a second cousin, who lived in, born, raised in England with two children. He and his wife moved here 5 or 7 years ago. It took him 5 years to get here in terms of visas and green cards and so on, and left because of anti-Semitism. Mm-hmm. And didn't live in London. London, it's not as serious as mm-hmm. some of the outlying areas.
Do you want to touch any more on the... I have a lot.
Thank you for your personal reflections on this as well. Thank you.
Thank you.